Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better, even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing
and make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing, online marketing, social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, I have an incredible guest, and today is actually tomorrow, meaning that he's in Singapore, which is all the way across the globe, exactly 12 hours difference. And I got to tell you, there's a doctor in the house. His name is Andrew Stotz, and he is a financier. The guy understands financing in your business. So, Andrew, how are you doing today, man?
I am great, and it's great to be with you, Brian.
Man, it's good to have you. And so the question I got to ask you right off the bat is, one of my wife's favorite foods is Singapore noodle. We get it from a Chinese restaurant. So it's got, like, you know, curry noodles in it, and it's got pork, and it's got shrimp and all this other stuff. So do they have Singapore noodle in Singapore?
They definitely do. In fact, it's one of the many tasty dishes. Now, remember, I live in Thailand, though I go to Singapore quite often, as well as China and around Asia. But definitely, Singapore noodles are there.
So Thailand and Singapore are two separate countries then?
Two separate countries, but about, you know, two hours apart by airplane. You remember those things we used to fly?
Yes. I do remember those. So let's get my audience to know you. We now know what kind of food you like and that you live in Thailand. But let's go for your origin story. So how did you go from being a dude who is doing dishes in a caboose? You're a dishwasher in a caboose. That's interesting unto itself, to basically serving up coffee in Thailand.
Well, I grew up in a little town called Hudson, Ohio, south of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And the thing about that town is, like many Midwestern towns, is that the railroad lines were a critical component, you know, of the development of the towns over the years. But of course, many years ago, those rail lines started to kind of lay fallow. So there was a train that was actually a small train, and it not many cars, meaning that had a caboose and an engine and a few cars. And there was an entrepreneur who made a restaurant out of it in our little town. And that was my first kind of official job. And I was a dishwasher, and my sister and I was working in the caboose in the back. My sister was a waitress. And I worked that job for a couple of weeks. And then one day I went to the job, and then I came home early. And my dad said, "What are you doing home?" I said, "I quit. It sucks." And my dad basically grabbed me by the ear and made me go back down there and apologize for leaving like that. But that was the beginning of my career. And then I grew up and got a little bit more mature. I left Ohio in 1986, roughly, and went to California and saw a whole new world of people that didn't look like me. And I was really intrigued and excited. So I just had a great time. I went to Cal State Long Beach, studied finance, and also did my MBA, worked for Pepsi in manufacturing. So I had good experience, not only knowledge of finance, but manufacturing experience in food and beverage. And then I decided to sell everything I own in 1992, sell my car, pack up 13 small boxes of stuff, put it on an airplane, and fly to Thailand. I arrived in Thailand in 1992. I was a teacher at a university. I was on the faculty teaching finance. And in 1993, I became an analyst in the stock market. I built a 20-year career as an analyst, a head of research, working at investment banks. And then after that, I was voted the president of CFA Society, Chartered Financial Society in Thailand. And I was a CFA charter holder and have been for all those years. And then in 1995, my best friend came from America and he said, "We need to start coffee business here in Thailand. Look, everybody's drinking instant coffee." So we set up a factory called Coffee Works, and that was in 1995. By 1997, the Asian crisis happened and everything collapsed. We almost lost the business. We moved into the factory. We survived, and now it's a business with about 110 employees and is 25 years old. So, and then I basically spend my time working on that business while Dale runs that business. And then I work in and run my business called A-Stots Investment Research, which is focused on finance.
Gotcha. So one of the things about running a business, I mean, I'm a QuickBooks junkie. And I, every single week, do all of my own finances. I want to know my balance sheet. I want to know my P&L statement. What do you think is the biggest mistake that business owners make around finance? You know, what are they missing or what are they not thinking about? And why is it so important?
I did a survey of executives and I asked them to make a binary choice. I love finance or I hate finance. And what I found was it's about a 50-50 mix. And that's from seasoned executives. And what I've really found from that is that people are intimidated by finance and therefore they run away from it. So I think the best advice that I can give is that people should embrace finance and try to keep it simple. But, you know, like you do with your finances, pay attention, pay a lot more attention to it because it's the only way you can truly survive over the long run.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I tend to track is trends. And this dates back years. But when I first started my business 20 years ago, one of the things I did was business card CDs. And I had a CD burner. And I bought it at an auction for like, you know, a couple $1,000s. And it was really expensive. I mean, at the time, I think it was like a $6,000 or $7,000 machine. And then one day it just crapped out. So I, you know, of course, start going through catalogs looking for a new CD burner. And then I went to my QuickBooks and I looked at it and I said, well, how much did I make on burning CDs last year? And it was $300. And I'm going, why am I going to spend $600 or $1,600 on something when I'm only making $300 and it's shrinking? It doesn't make much sense, right?
Yep.
So you've got, you know, some other things that people need to think about. And you've got five core things that every business owner or every business person needs to think about with their finance. So what are those five things?
So, and this really comes from my 30 years of working in, teaching, and, you know, applying finance and also applying it at my business. And that is the five things are, first, what I call develop your sixth sense. 10 is enough is the second thing. The third thing is you will never get rich cutting costs. The fourth thing is value your assets. And number five is finance adds no value. If you can know those five things, I believe that you've got the key tools that can help you be successful in finance.
See, now those almost sound like sitcom titles. Yeah, exactly. So let's start with number one, which is develop your sixth sense, C-E-N-T-S.
Exactly. So basically, I have a database of every listed company in the world that's listed in the stock market. It was about 52,000 companies listed in the stock market. From that data set, I do a lot of manipulation of that data. But one thing that's very clear, if you look at the average net profit margin of every company over a long period of time, the average is 6%. So what does that mean? For every $1 that you are selling in your business, you should have on average 6 cents left over as net profit. If you have below that, then you need to really focus on figuring out how you can get above that or significantly above that. So that is a number one thing, is to focus in on making sure you're getting at least 6% net profit every year, every month, as best that you can.
See, I would have expected that to be a lot higher. So it's only 6% is the average of all of the companies on the stock market. Man, that's wild.
I think most people think that, you know, they should be getting 10%, 20%.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, they confuse the different margins. In one of my courses, I talk about really there's only three margins that matter on the profit and loss. And the main one, of course, is the net profit margin. And so, yeah. A lot of people think that they're going to make tons of money, you know, on that margin. But the reality is if you're making above 6%, you are above average.
Well, that's where I want to be, dude. So number two, 10 is enough. Is it really enough?
Well, this comes to my work as an analyst. I looked at all the companies I could find that had a significant increase in their share price over a long period of time. I was looking at, you know, roughly 5 to 10 times increase in the share price in the stock market. Once I found that group, then I asked the question, you know, what was the average revenue growth of these companies over a 10-year period? And what I found, and before I tell you what I found, I did actually calculate the average revenue growth of all of those companies around the world. Would you like to make a guess at what the average company's revenue growth has been over the last 2 decades?
6%?
Well, you're exactly right. 6% is the exact amount of revenue growth of the average company. And what I found was those companies that had remarkable share price performance had on average 10% or above. So what I'm saying is that if you can consistently grow a business at 10% every year, in fact, you'll be solidly above average. Now, of course, you know, you got a smaller business, you know, you want to grow it faster, that's fine. But remember, this, you know, you can also blow up your business sometimes by trying to grow too fast. So stay with steady 10%. If you can get 15, if you can get steady 20, but we're talking on average 10% over 10 years, you have produced a winning business.
That totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. So the next one cuts me to the core because I get this all the time. It's like, you know, well, can you just teach me how to do what you do so I can do it myself? Because I don't really want to pay for it. You know, I need to cut costs. I need to cut back. And that drives me crazy because I don't think people understand the investment. So let's talk about that.
So number three is you'll never get rich cutting costs. And I want to explain this in a story. After the 1997 crisis, the gross domestic product of Thailand fell, the GDP fell by 11% in 1998. I lost my job at the investment bank and Dale and I had to move into the factory. And the factory was really literally in a jungle outside of Bangkok. So we were out in the boondocks and it was in August of 1998 that my sister called me and said her cancer had returned and she asked me, please come home. I'm only going to live another month, according to the doctor. When I hung up that phone, I had lost my job. We had lost a lot of the wealth that I had. We were in the process of really losing our factory and our business. The economy was a disaster. And now I was about to lose my sister. Dale and I just looked at each other and cried. And that was really the bottom of my, life in many ways. My sister unfortunately did pass away. And when I came back, we had to ask the question, you know, can we really survive? Can we survive this downturn? And it's a lot like the question many people are asking right now. And the point is that I read this great book called The 6 Month Fix by a guy named Gary Sutton. And we should put it into the show notes because I highly recommend it. But basically, the first words of his book says, Hi, Mr. CEO, I'm the turnaround guy. When I arrive, you leave. Because I can do what you can't, and that is cut costs. And what I learned from that book is that when you're in an emergency situation, the only thing you can truly cover, you know, you can truly control right now is to cut your costs. And we did that, and we survived. But what we learned is that eventually you get your cost down to some minimum amount, and that's it. You can't go any further, or else you'll cut to the bone. And therefore, you really can only truly grow a great business by growing revenue eventually, and that is limitless.
So that makes sense. So the lesson learned here, and I'm sorry to hear about your sister, is that, you know, you can cut costs, but, you know, a lot of times I think people don't understand the return on investment portion of investing in a business in order to help it grow. So, I mean, obviously using other people's money is great. Using your own money is better. But you in order to grow a business, you have to invest in that business, right?
Exactly. And I think one other way I would think about it is that, you know how we say, you know, everybody's got the same 24 hours in a day?
Right.
Well, I say that a little bit differently. The first thing is when you think about economics is price times quantity. If we think about revenue of your business, it's the price you sell your product for and the quantity is the number of items that you sell. But when you think about a human, really our quantity is the hours we have available to work, and our price is the price that we're earning on the hours that we're working. And what I basically say is that really we only probably have about 2 to 4 hours of real concentrated work time where we can really focus. Let's just say 4 hours. That means basically that that's your limit. Elon Musk cannot work more than 4 hours a day of concentrated work. He can do it maybe for a short period of time, but to do that over a long period of time, you're going to suffer physically. The result of that is that the quantity of your work is limited. So if you want to get rich or successful, it is all about getting your price that you're earning for the hours that you're working up. So I tell young people, if you want to get rich, stop working so hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, hustle economy. Mm. It's like hustle, 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 work harder, you know, all that kind of stuff. But in reality, I mean, it's not only just, you know, charging more, because obviously you'll hit a brick wall eventually. It's like, I'm going to charge $500 an hour. You know, finding somebody to pay that is one thing, but also, you know, expanding by utilizing other humans. If you get two humans doing two jobs, you can make 25% more, right? I mean, so that's it too, right? It's not double.
Correct. That's expanding your quantity by not expanding your hours, but adding additional hours.
Right.
And now you're thinking like a business person, where if I want to produce more coffee in my factory, I need to just add another production line and I can do it. And the same thing, as you say, as a business person, you know, we're trying to expand our quantity, but we're also ultimately, if we can expand our price, and for people in business, as well as young people, I always say, you know, ultimately your knowledge and the value that you bring really comes down to the knowledge that you have and the experience that you have, that you can help people, you know. So I devote a huge amount of my life to learning, and I got my PhD in finance when I was 50 years old. I've read thousands of books, written, you know, lots of stuff. And I teach all the time, and I teach because it just keeps me learning. And the more we learn and the more value that we can add, then the higher we can make, you know, our revenue.
I agree. All right. So the next piece of this is value your ass at, what does that mean?
So, value your assets means forget about your P&L. Your ultimate source of value is your assets. So for instance, in one of my courses where I teach, you know, people who want to really understand finance, I tell them that, you know, ultimately the only financial statement that truly matters is your balance sheet. And a lot of times people look at the balance sheet, and you could just think of the balance sheet as very simple. Like, let's just say we started a business, and on day one, we all put together our money and we put $1 million in the bank. So that $1 million is cash, and that's an asset. But it's not an asset that's going to earn much when we put it in the bank. So where it's going to earn more is when we start to use it to create the products and services that we, you know, ultimately are making. And through those products and services, we're accumulating assets. Those assets can be intangible assets, like I have software as a service and other things that I provide to my clients. Those are intangible assets. And in my coffee factory, we have tangible assets like our roasting machines that produce tremendous value. So ultimate source of value comes from the balance sheet, in particular, the asset portion of the balance sheet. The P&L is just showing the flows with that. So I just highly focus people on assets and the return that you're getting on the assets.
Totally makes sense. Again, we're talking about investing, you know, that $1 million into equipment, which could obviously make more money than 0.5% in the bank right now.
Yep.
All right. So let's move to the fifth and final point, which is finance adds no value. What the heck does that mean?
So I teach finance courses for undergrads, for masters. And that's the first thing I say in every class. And it's a real downer. It's a real disappointment. Finance adds no value. And most of the people are saying, you know, but I came here to study finance to add value. And I said, well, you came to the wrong place. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is, after many, many years, what I've learned is that finance is really a support function. Maybe like you could say human resources, a support function. When you say, I need five more staff, you go to the human resource department and you say, can you help me? The finance department is the department that helps provide the feedback necessary to judge the management decisions that are being made. Ultimately, value is created from the ideas that you come up with and the action that you implement to create and implement these products and services. And so never lose sight. And once you realize that finance is a supporting function, it's less intimidating. I think a lot of people are intimidated by, you know, a fancy dressed CFO or the people that talk big about finance. Stop getting intimidated by that. Instead, focus on the idea that how can I get my finance knowledge to the point where I have all the support I need to make better decisions.
Mm-hmm. Totally makes sense. So finance in itself is actually an activity. It's kind of like toilet paper. It's a necessary evil. If you don't have it, it's bad. But if you, you know, if you do have it, everybody's happy. And
exactly. So, yeah. And there's another thing in the bathroom that it's like, and that is a mirror, where it is a reflection of your past action.
Hmm.
Three months ago, I said to myself, I'm going to shift one part of my business. And I believe that it's going to have this impact on my revenue, my cost, and those things. And now the question is, did my decision lead to the result that I expected? So in that way, business ultimately is just an ultimate science experiment where we hypothesize, oh, if I create this product, people will buy it. If I do this marketing outreach, I'll reach a lot of people and I'll get a lot of, you know, sales, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, finance is the measure that allows us to see how successful that decision was from a finance perspective.
Awesome. Well, Andrew, this has been great. I mean, you've really kind of, you know, put it into a neat package, and I appreciate you doing that. But I'm sure people are going to want to learn more. So how can they learn more about finance in their business?
So the best way to do that is I just actually come out with a course called Finance Made Ridiculously Simple. And I put a special coupon code on my website, which is myworstinvestmentever.com for my podcast. So the guests and anybody listening can go to myworstinvestmentever.com/bacon and you will find a 30% discount to that particular course where you will get access to me. But more importantly, if you just want to reach out with a question, feel free to just look me up on LinkedIn at Andrew Stotts in Bangkok.
That's awesome. Well, you just gave Bacon a 30% boost in its financial ability. So I think that's really awesome, dude.
Let's rock the bacon.
Absolutely. So Andrew, man, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your time, your knowledge, and dropping some sizzling hot bacon knowledge bombs on my peeps. I'm looking forward to having you back on and talking about, you know, other financial topics that we need to be thinking about. So, man, thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And thank you for everybody who's listening.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.